Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Forget the coronavirus. Why can't we all just agree? This is Wretched Radio. Squabbling, fighting.
What are we agreeing on?
Well, there have been some agreements in human history. Far more differences, however, and it is not just social issues, headlines, what's going on our planet. It's in the church. Why don't people see things my way? It would solve so many problems. I hear people complaining about their situations. You could have called me. I hear people that are confused about what's going on in the world. Just send me a text. I can help you out. If you would just follow everything I think and everything I believe, we'd all get along swimmingly, but that seems to be the problem. Doesn't it? Forget coronavirus. We seem to be having some disagreements in that territory, don't we? Let's talk about the church, specifically issues like worship. Well, there's a perennial. That's an evergreen battleground, isn't it? We fight over worship, the style of music, the order of worship. So liturgical issues. How much praying do we do? Reading of the Bible. How long is the sermon? What about the architecture of the building that we're in? How's about the design of the foyer or foyer, if it's a really cheap one? I think that's the difference. If it's really nice, it's a foyer. It's sort of like the difference between a vase and a vase. If it's over a dollar, it's a vase, said
eccentric,
my grandmother.
They're merely weird.
That's if you're rich, you're eccentric.
You're eccentric.
If you're not, you're just strange is what you are. How do we perhaps not agree on all issues? That's a different conversation. But how do we at least get along when we don't agree? Might I suggest it begins by at least understanding why we don't agree on everything? Once again, this kills me to say, Ken Ham is right. We find an answer in Genesis. It's the fall. We're broken brain people. Our cognitive functioning, it is kafritz. Our memory, oy, gavilta fish. What? Our memories are so bad.
How bad are they?
Forget coronavirus. Why can't we all just get along? If you've got a problem, just text me. Just got an issue, give me a call. See, I don't even remember what I said a few seconds ago. That's how bad our memories are. That's why you have to just beat it into your brain and study for exams. It's all an effect of the fall. Our processing unit needs help. It needs rewiring. That is why this is I think Romans 12, 1 and 2, profoundly helpful, contemporary. So this would be like the Message Bible of Romans 12, 1 and 2. What Steve Jobs is to Apple, God is to you. Steve designed Apples to work with Apple software, Apple programming. You don't, they don't work right or at all. God designed you. If your brain isn't operating on his system, the Bible, then it doesn't work right, if at all. We need reprogramming. We need rewiring. We need new downloaded information. And even then, we can come up with differences of opinion on how to handle issues, how we deal with a public story. There's so many big things that happen in evangelical Christianity, the big breaking news stories. And how many differences of opinion do we have on those? They don't stop. And so we tend to get mad at one another, argue with one another, and not have the unity that is praise to God. It's Romans 15, 5 and 6. That we will with one voice glorify God. God is unified. The Trinity doesn't squabble. They don't get annoyed with one another. We're God's image bearers, and when we squabble, we're not acting like him. When we disagree, we are not acting like him. And when we don't glorify him. This is a bigger deal than I think we realize. So let us begin with taking a little self-examination, shall we? The issues before us are things like liturgy, worship style, the architecture of a building. You and I are in the same church, and we've got to go to a meeting, and we've got to make a decision on these things. Inevitably, we're going to have a difference of opinion, and I'm going to go home going, what is the matter with? Why don't they? This is so obvious. And it's obvious to you. What's the difference? Let me ask you to rate this, perhaps on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm going to give you a list of human experiences that you have. And I would like for you to answer these things on a scale of 1 to 10, if we can do it that way numerically. Music. What type of music do you like? If you like, let's just say on the one side, it's just contemporary music. That's all you like. That's a 1. A 10 is you love classical music. That's your thing. That's Mrs. Friel. She goes like on a power walk, and she puts her earbuds in and listens to Baroque. That'll get you pumped up. Well, it does. She just digs it. That's what she likes. So let's say she's a 10 because it's Baroque, and you like Leonard Skinner. You're a 1. And I'm not saying which one is better or worse. Just saying that's the scale. All right, what type of music do you like? Give yourself a number. Style of music. What is your vocal range? You're a 1 because you're like me. You've got about 3 notes in you, and they're really low. Versus, oh, your vocal range is all over the place. How's about your ability to read music? How's about your ability to just sing intuitively? Are you a 1 or are you a 10? How's about this question? How do you learn? Is it visually? Is it just very cognitive? Just give me boom, ba-da, boom, ba-da, boom, ba-da, boom. Outline this thing for me. Which style of learning do you like? What is your attention span? Are you a gnat like me? Or, you know, I sometimes can sit and listen to something and it's like, oh, 3 hours later, I forgot to actually get up and take a walk. My legs have fallen sound asleep. Where are you at? Where is your life at? Is it pretty calm right now, or is it pretty chaotic? What season of life are you in right now? Are things very new and fresh and exciting? So you're coming into adulthood, and so you're exploring and experiencing all these new things. You're contemplating marriage. You get to go. You've got your own credit card. Or are you at the other end of the spectrum where life it's coming to an end pretty soon? Where are you at on a scale of 1 to 10? Do you have children? Let's just say we're using numerical scale for the sake of a point. You've got no kids, so you're a 1. You're a homeschool family, so you have 8 to 12. Then you're a 10. All right. So you're giving yourself, based on experiences in life, where you're at in life, you're putting it on a numeric scale. Now, how did you score? Add up all of your numbers. And what number did you come up with? So I'm just going to say, based on this rather arbitrary scoring system, Tony got a 42, Joey is a 64, and I'm 108. Now, again, this isn't like who's got the highest number. The point is that we've got different numbers. Now, it comes to the floor. Let's talk about building this building. What type of building are we going to build? And what type of seating are we going to have? And what type of music are we going to play? And what sort of liturgy are we going to have? And let the games begin. I know what I'd like, and I think it's right. Why? Because I had a score of 108. Tony, he wants something radically different because what was your score, Tony? 42? Is that what you were?
Yeah, sure.
42. All right, again, it's not who's got the highest score. It's that they're different scores. Tony likes a particular style of music. He's going to push for that. No, I'm not trying to do that. Well, actually, we do. We all have a self-interest in all of these things. And our brains, which are broken, are informed by life experiences and preferences, what we've seen, what we've enjoyed, where we were at when it happened, whether it was a good experience or a bad experience, where we're at with a season in life. Kids, What type of music would the kids like? That's what's important to me. I got a bunch of kids. I want to keep these kids coming versus somebody who doesn't have kids and they just love the Baroque. So they want the high music. You got a bunch of kids and they're like, if we've had that kind of music, then the kids aren't going to like it. And that is where the squabbles begin. How, however, do we make them end? That's the important question. Because all of these things are going to be a part of our decision-making process. It is inevitable. And this is why we get frustrated with one another. You're calling a pastor. You can take all of those aforementioned questions, add a bunch more if you want to. And the reality is, you're going to want a different type of pastor than I want because of where you're at, what your experiences and what your needs are, what your preference is. Is this guy an expositor? Does this guy tell a lot of stories? I need stories. I like stories. You don't even, maybe you're not even cognizant of it. I just need a lot of stories because I learn by stories. I hate stories. Just give me the facts, ma'am. I'm Jack Webb. Just give me the facts. We're going to want a different kind of pastor. And so it is, you and I are going to go to the mattresses on these subjects. And we are going to have battle royals over these subjects unless we learn how to learn why it is that we disagree. We'll do that next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us today. We do always appreciate when you spend part of your day with us listening to Wretched Radio. A quiz for today. What is it that is absolutely free? It will bring you great information on the tough theological issues of today and keep you up to date on the latest happenings here at Wretched. What could it be? Well, if you already signed up for our newsletter, you know. It is, in fact, our Wretched newsletter. Yep, it is free. And it will, in fact, bring you great, thorough, in-depth information on a wide range of theological issues that face Christians today. The question now is, what hoops must you jump through to get this amazing offer? Well, first you grab your favorite computing device, then you go to wretched.org/newsletter. Fill in the information and you're good to go. Then every month, the Wretched newsletter appears in your email, chock full of wretchedy goodness. wretched.org/newsletter. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Good news? Yeah! Lots of it due to the pandemic. Guess who's been shut down for a number of weeks? That's right, Planned Parenthood. You know what that means. Women who are experiencing a crisis, they are fleeing to other centers to get prenatal help and free ultrasounds. That means preborn centers are busier than ever. That means you and I have an opportunity to support them to be giving free ultrasounds 80% of the time. Mom chooses life because she sees it's her baby in her womb. And we need some help filling up the warehouse at preborn so that they can provide prenatal services and postnatal services. Month of May, $100,000 match. Not kidding. Would you please support preborn.org/wretched at this rather crucial time? preborn.org/wretched.
Here at Wretched, we rely on our gospel partners because without you, there is no us. To show you how much we appreciate you and how much we need you, we wrote you a haiku. Please partner with Wretched. You will not regret it. Counting is hard. Okay, I'm the first to admit, not very good at haikus, but we do truly still need and appreciate our gospel partners. Our gospel partners not only help us keep the lights on around here, but they allow us to keep making Wretched every day. So if you are a gospel partner, thank you very much for your support. We do truly appreciate you. If you're not a gospel partner, would you consider it? If you love listening to Wretched and want to continue to hear us every day, visit wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. wretched.org/donate. And no more haikus. wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Here's your invitation to support SOS Ministries. They want to see a God-fearing, gospel-proclaiming church rise up across Uganda and impact the whole of Ugandan society. SOS Ministries hopes to accomplish all of this with community outreach, Legacy Christian Academy, the Ministry of Church Strengthening, and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip Indigenous pastors. So would you consider supporting SOS Ministries? Go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Books of the Bible. The book of Revelation describes visions given to the Apostle John by Jesus Christ concerning the consummation of history. Its symbolic style makes Revelation a mystery to many, but you can understand much by asking what are the setting and action and who are the characters. When you wonder how it's all going to end, God has given Revelation just for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If we could all just agree with me. This is Wretched Radio. Been in some squabbles, getting a little frustrated with folks, perhaps. An exercise in understanding why it is we arrive at different conclusions will help you to not be so annoyed with people who don't agree with you. Because we find it hard to imagine. It seems so obvious. It seems so simple. And yet, because of the fall, we all bring things to the party that corrupt our ability to conclude the same thing. And so it is. We would do well to at least understand why these people are so wrong about everything. And then we can figure out how to work through it. It has never been to me more evident than with the coronavirus business. There are people, everybody's entrenched. I don't know that anybody has been persuaded to move an inch on what their opinion is about the government response, how bad it is, how whether you should wear a mask, all of these issues. People have got their heels dug in. And for the most part, we all have access to the same stuff. I suspect it is. We go looking for the stuff that affirms what we already have concluded anyway. But we're not changing minds, and we're getting annoyed with one another. In fact, I'm actually surprised. There's an article, and I've got it somewhere here in my stack of stories. They're talking about people in public that are fighting over masks. And I have to confess to you, I'm surprised there hasn't been more of it. I think that there actually could be more. This could come to lines being drawn on the subject of masks, because it's that physical identifier of what your attitude is about coronavirus and the response. I'm amazed there hasn't been more fighting. Well, this one article basically is saying, actually, that is starting to happen more and more. And people are starting to come to blows with one another over this issue because they don't want to get sick from other people. Why are we getting so annoyed with one another? Here's the headline, by the way, MSN. Masks become a flashpoint for protests and fights as businesses, beaches, and parks reopen. You're a masker. You're out in public. You're walking by somebody who doesn't have one. You're a non-masker. You walk by somebody on the beach who has a mask. Dude, there's an ocean breeze. Don't think you're going to be getting corona out of here. And on it goes. Maybe, just maybe, understanding why it is that we arrive at different conclusions will give us a start and at least not getting annoyed with one another on more important issues like issues of the church, but then coming up with a way to work through them. Have you persuaded anybody yet with that meme? That aligned with your side of the story on corona? Have you persuaded anybody with an article that you thought, there it is. Now I'm just going to send this off and everybody's going to agree with me. And nobody budges. And the same thing is true in the church, and the same thing is true in the family. Question. How many kids do you have right now? How many kids do you have in the home? I'm not talking about grandkids. I'm talking about kids in the home. All right, so Tony, you got none. No zero. Little kids in the house. Joey, you've got due, correct?
Correct.
And I've got none that are living at home. The three of us are going to get together at church because we need to determine how much we're going to spend on the kids area in the church. We have $10,000 for the kids area. Do you think that we might have a different attitude right out of the gate when it comes to how much should be spent on the decorating the kids area because of our situation with kids? All right, Tony, but you've got grandkids, so they might come to church on occasion. So you might be using that. Joey, you're going to use that. I am not going to use it. Let's talk finances, shall we? We bring that into it. And then what do? Then we have all kinds of surface arguments about the subject, never really trying to understand why it is that my brother in the Lord is so wrong. Now, let's keep talking about kids. And the and now that we've concluded, all right, we're going to spend $7,500 to redo the kids area. Now we've got to come up with what we're going to put on the walls.
Oh, I don't care about the walls. I care about the equipment.
See, I care about the walls because I know we walk by that stuff every single day. And if you put up another one of those pictures of a boat that looks like a bathtub with a giraffe sticking his neck out with a hippopotamus next to him, kids are going to think that Noah's Ark is just a joke. We need Bible verses up. We need scripture. Teach them the way that they should go. Not little fairy stories about Noah and the Ark. Okay. That's why we need to have Bible verses on the wall.
Okay, give me $5 in paint and I will paint them by hand.
Fine, but
it will
as long
be
as
my
the
handwriting,
$5 gets taken out of your
there.
Stupid equipment program that you want, the kids have got enough technology. They don't need any technology. They need Bible verses. And on go the church meetings. And frankly, Joey, that was one of our finest recreations because that's pretty close to reality in a lot of church meetings.
I'm still a little angry.
That is why, perhaps, if you've got a disagreement with somebody, how's about just rather than contending, how's about question asking? How's about...
I mean, like, are you stupid?
Well, that's a start. Maybe we can work with that. Perhaps get a little more sophisticated with our question asking to reveal... So at least, look, this I'm not thinking like Greg Kokel. Greg Kokel is high about asking a well-placed question to undermine somebody's worldview. I'm not talking about that. Look, I think that's strategic and that can be really, really, really smart. And we don't do that enough when it comes to evangelism, when it comes to worldview conversations. I'm talking about genuinely asking questions to understand where my brother or sister is coming from, why they are concluding that, so that at least I can go, okay, I see that. All right, I get that. That's not conceding your position. It's at least seeing, well, they've got a reason for it. Or I could potentially say to them, hey, Tony, I know that you're opposed to spending that $7,500 in the nursery. How come? What is there a reason that you just find it so difficult to spend that money? Maybe he's just a skinflint. Maybe just $7,500 to him is like, are you out of your mind? Okay, here's another way. Tony, you grew up fabulously wealthy. Just work with me on this.
Fabulously wealthy.
True. And money talk around the house, it was just constant. And it was big figures that were being tossed about. Joey, on the other hand, Joey was so poor.
How poor was I?
He got a stick for Christmas, and he was glad for it.
Whole stick to myself?
That exactly.
I had to share sticks with my sisters.
Now, let's have you two have a conversation about the funding for the nursery. If you don't think that you are as guilty of bringing a presupposition as Joey and Tony are to the financial conversation about the nursery, we're very confused, which is our exact problem. Let's bring it down. Let's make it more personal. You see somebody who is, they're just, wow, the type of clothes that they wear in church. It is just so, the way they spend that money. What's the matter with them? Don't they know that they've got people here in this church that are just, they've lost their jobs and they're flaunting it by walking around here? Do you think that they're even saved? Could they possibly be saved wearing that stuff, those designer clothes? Maybe instead, if it's an issue, how's about, I don't know, asking questions? How's about asking them why it is that they dress that way over, say, a friendly fellowship meal Rather than just rendering a verdict with our busted brains, we instead engage one another lovingly, assuming the best, and we get to know the other person to ask them why it is that they behave the way they do, think the way that they do, and make decisions the way that they do. Not so that we can now be on the same page, but so that I can see somebody on a different page and not be torqued about it. Not be agitated by everybody that I live with or go to school with, work with, church with. Maybe just asking and understanding and recognizing that people bring different things to the party than I do can help me to not be so agitated all the time. Missions trip decisions. Okay, I've got a very specific attitude about the difference between short-term and long-term missions, which is why I would encourage you to support the Masters Academy International, where we train indigenous pastors in their country to minister and to preach the word in pulpits in their country. See that? So now you talk about doing a
show. See what you did there.
Well, I didn't do it on purpose entirely, but now you want to have the kids go for like a couple of weeks. Oh, well, I've got some thoughts on that. And you went on a missions trip as a kid, and it was life-changing. Ding, 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 ding. Let the fight begin. Or we stop, slow down, remember that we're in Christ together, and we glorify God with one voice when we don't squabble and we don't fight. And maybe the beginning of that harmony is just understanding that our brains are broken and that people just plain think differently than we do because of life experiences. This is Wretched Radio.
If you're like most people, you have a passion to see souls saved, but don't know where to start. Might I suggest Hearts for the Lost? They assist local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They fly out to your church, put on an evangelism seminar, and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. As Americans lose jobs, sources of food, and housing drying up, the pandemic has increased the demand for charities. So far, donors are giving plenty in response to the outbreak, but the needs continue to multiply and scammers are working to undermine charitable giving. According to Kevin Scally, the Chief Relationship Officer at Charity Navigator, I don't exactly know what that is, most nonprofit organizations are forecasting a 30 to 40% decrease in revenue between the months of March and June. And he says, I imagine it will continue for some time and that there will be a ripple effect with the economic shutdown. On April 2nd, the Center for Effective Philanthropy published a letter asking donors to increase giving to groups fighting the pandemic. The letter reads, what nonprofits need most right now is more money. Without rapid and meaningful infusions of additional resources, many organizations will have to dramatically pare back programs and services or fold their operations entirely, and the results for the economy, vulnerable populations, communities, and progress on crucial issues will be devastating. Donors answered the call. According to Candid, an organization that tracks nonprofit groups and philanthropy, donors have provided 2,750 grants totaling $9.5 billion globally for COVID-19 response efforts. But the disasters that prompt generosity also prompt fraud. The FTC noted an increase in coronavirus-related scams since the pandemic began, receiving 35,500 reports of fraud since January. Examples include official-looking emails with the World Health Organization logo asking recipients to download a list of coronavirus symptoms and robocalls from a government agency asking people to provide personal information to get their stimulus checks. Scammers have created fake charities and asked people to donate by mail or through an online giving portal. The FTC posted advice for avoiding such scams, including researching the charity first and donating by credit card instead of cash. And these are charities, leaving me to wonder how churches will fare through this. One quarter of Americans say their religious faith has grown stronger as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite most churches not being able to hold in-person services, according to a new Pew Research Center survey, the poll of over 10,100 U.S. adults found that 24% said their faith has grown stronger, 47% said it hasn't changed much during the pandemic, and 2% said it's grown weaker. 26% said the question wasn't applicable to them. How sad. And this growth in faith hasn't been confined to Christians or even regular churchgoers. 11% of Americans who said their religious affiliation is nothing in particular said their faith has grown. 26% of Americans who attend church only a few times a year, and 11% who seldom or never attend church, said their faith has grown during the pandemic. Begging the question, faith in what? More Wretched Radio straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
Important dates in Christian history. 1962. Second Vatican Council begins. The most significant council since Trent. It will promote new attitudes and practices in Catholicism as Rome seeks to address the modern age. After Vatican II, priests perform the Mass in the local language whilst facing the congregation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's see if you can practice what I just preached. This is Wretched Radio. Let us see if we can perhaps not come up with total agreement on a rather contentious and challenging subject, but if we could at least understand why it is that we process the information that we all have to come up with a different conclusion. And as we attempt to do that, we are also going to have to apply what I believe is a rule of discernment. That's right, a rule of discernment, maybe even a couple of them. So often when it comes to discernment, we don't need to load the gun. It's already in the holster, ready to go. In fact, frankly, we have it pulled out. We have our finger on the trigger and just give me something to shoot at and bang, bang, bang. Proverbs 26:17 come to mind. Yet you're like a man who grabs a dog by the ears when you enter a quarrel that is not your own. But we love it. We love the fight. We love to get in there. But before I engage, I need to ask myself the question, is this my fight? Is this my issue? Is this something that I can contribute to? Do I even belong in this conversation? And are there other details to the story that disqualify me from talking about it, whether it is on a blog, whether it is on a radio program, or whether it is at the coffee shop? Okay, coffee shops. Just for those of you, you've forgotten, people used to sell coffee and drink it and sit at tables together in a public place. It was all the rage. The Starbucks, I don't know if you remember that name, but it was really big and we used to do that a lot. Do you need to be talking about this? You seem like you're confused and dazed, Tony. You've forgotten?
Vaguely remember people.
Speaking of time, if it was hard to keep track of before,
oh my.
Wow. I'm just like a balloon just floating out there. And if I don't have something to tether me down, I have no idea where space and time even begin and end. Do you need to talk about a subject? Furthermore, another rule of discernment, are you contributing to the betterment of the situation, or are you breaking the news? Now, I grant you, there could be a ministry out there. They see it as their role to break a story. That's up to them to figure out if they believe that they're doing something of a service to warn people, to let people know there's something going on in evangelical Christianity that you should be aware of. Okay, I don't see that as most of our roles, certainly not mine. And so it is. Got a story right here. Blank blank puts the president on leave because he did something. Specifically, this is what he did. He hired somebody who had moral failings and was actually dismissed from a church. Notice I'm not saying the name. Was dismissed from a church, but he was hired by the university to teach there as part of a restoration program. It was revealed that this fellow was hired and that perhaps what he had done at that church was a little bit more and protracted than what was originally disclosed to the university. And now this good university is just taking a lot of heat and the president is in a lot of trouble and it looks like they might be terminating him. Now, that raises some questions. Do I need to know this story? And the answer to it is I don't. I mean, I'm not affiliated with this school. I'm not sending my kids there. Am I interested? Because of course it's a story that is interesting. Yeah, but is it my business to talk about this story? I don't think it is. I don't think that this is my quarrel, my fight, my issue. Furthermore, I don't know many of these details. That's another level of discernment. I don't know many of these details. I don't know what really happened. Who did this? When did that happen? What was disclosed? How did the faculty? I don't know. So I can't render a verdict. I can't say anything about it. And we don't adjudicate cases here. Remember the concept of, hey, innocent until proven guilty? Yeah, you take it seriously, but innocent until proven guilty. So when it's finally determined what went on there, did somebody make a mistake? Was this wise? Was this not wise? I'm going to wait for that. And I might not even discuss it then because I don't want to be grabbing a dog by the ears. Having said that, this raises a question for us that is indeed relevant. Should pastors, Christian leaders who have had a moral failure ever be allowed into leadership and ministry again? That's a good question, isn't it? And I'll bet you have a different answer than I do. Why? Because thanks to Lifeway, who spends a ton of money on polls, they surveyed pastors to ask, do you think a pastor who's had a moral failing should ever be restored? 24% said no, never. 50% were like, yeah, if it's a long restoration process, it can be worked through, depends on the situation, etc. Well, I'm talking about a moral failing. Usually it's a sexual issue. And then another 24, 25% were like, eh, not really sure. All right. So we've got disparity over that question. I know where I stand on the subject, and I've got some good brothers who disagree with me. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why. Maybe this will help. Let me ask you some questions about this issue and why it is that we will come up with a different answer about whether or not a fallen pastor should be restored. You're talking to somebody. They think no, you think yes, you think yes, they think you disagree on the subject. All right, how long have you been in the faith versus that person? Have you had experience with this issue? Have you seen this before? So you're asking the question, can a fallen pastor be restored to ministry? Let's just say you've got some experience with this because this happened in your church. And that other fellow that you're talking to doesn't. Do you think you might have a different understanding on the issue? Absolutely, especially if it turned out a particular way. Your church actually hired a fallen pastor, and it was a disaster. He did it all over again. You are going to be like, not a chance, or at least inclined to. What if, however, you hired a pastor at your church who did have a moral failing years ago, supposedly restored, brought into the church, and it turned out just great? Do you think that's going to influence your decision? Yeah. What's your view of office or elder? If you think it's like, hey, just relate to the people, daddy-o, we're all sinners, don't you know? Come on, like what? You're going to cast the first stone? Versus this is a dignified office. This is the highest calling that there is. Do you think you might have a different conclusion? What about your view of the Bible? High or low view? What about your view of church discipline? How's about this? What if you're a male versus a female? Think that might make a difference? Guys might be more inclined to go, look, it's an issue. It's such a struggle for all these. Every guy has, every man's battle. So, I mean, I get it. It's not good that he fell, but, you know, I get it. And a woman is like, what? A pastor had a moral failure? A sexual indiscretion? Are you kidding me? A guy might be more inclined to sympathize. A woman might be more inclined to be just absolutely disgusted by it. How's about you struggle with the same issue or not? That's going to make a difference. You're going to be more sympathetic or less sympathetic if you do. How's about if you know the person or someone who has gone through this? Yeah, I knew a guy, man. He had a moral failure. Great pastor, had a moral failure, man, but it just wrecked his life. Then his wife left him, kids. He's just living in poverty. I think we need to restore that these people because we can't do... See how you bring this to the party? Were you perhaps a victim of a leader who abused his authority and treated you inappropriately, maybe not sexually, but abusive through power and coercion and spiritual abuse or emotional abuse? How's about your central interpretive motif? How's about if your central, your thing, how you view the Bible, how you think about God, if you are holy, 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 that's God, and we are to be a holy set apart people, versus grace, 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 it's all about the grace. And Jesus just forgives sinners, and man, it's amazing that he'd even be willing to forgive a guy who had a moral indiscretion. Now, you bring that to the party, and now you're going to have the discussion on whether or not pastors should be restored to ministry. How's that going to go for you? Do we see how it is that we can arrive at different conclusions? How do we get over this? How do we get better at this? And this is a trick. All of those aforementioned things, office elder, view of male, female, struggle with the same issue, know somebody, victim of the sin, central, put it aside, put it all aside, put it all aside. You got to lose all of that. We bring that. We've got to be etch-a-sketch people. I've got to erase all of my presuppositions and my experiences temporarily and just look at what the Bible says, period. Then I can bring in all of my experiences and pressure test those things, come up with objections too, but I must lose all of those emotions and feelings and render a decision based on the studying of God's word. That is the only way that we can ever come up with the correct conclusion and the same conclusion. Easy? Necessary? Absolutely. This is Wretched Radio. First, the good news from the Philippines.
Every day in the whole Philippines, there are thousands of new believers being baptized. There are many churches that are being planted right now. The church is strong here and ready to carry on the Great Commission.
That's excellent news, but there is some bad news.
A Bible study leader is not able to provide Bibles for them because he himself do not have any support for the ministry. He's having a hard time even to find his transportation going to the Bible study.
That's not good at all, but it gets worse, I'm afraid.
Filipinos cannot afford to buy a Bible because poverty, and they are very much engrossed trying to make a living for their family. So no more funds to buy a Bible.
You and I can change that for just $5 per Bible with Bible League International. We can bless our brothers and sisters in the Philippines. How many Bibles could you send? Wretched.org/Bible. Wretched.org/Bible.
Imagine, if you would, a man. A man who lived such an extraordinary life that Western civilization actually changed the entire calendar system to commemorate his birthday. The obvious question would be, who was that man? Followed by, what did he do to deserve such an honor? Well, that man doesn't have to be imagined. That individual is Jesus Christ. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is the perfect booklet for every skeptic or unbeliever who believes that Jesus was just a mere mortal. To get your copies of The Man Who Split Time, visit wretched.org/time today. Read it, and you'll be back. And get me more copies to give away to anyone and everyone. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is available now at wretched.org/time. Wretched.org/time. Wretched. Amazing grace.
Not to say I told you so, but I've been sharing with you how Tomorrow Clubs think kids camps in Eastern Europe meeting weekly to hear the gospel. Kids get saved, parents get saved, and churches get revitalized. Here is just one example so I can say, I told you so.
There is actually was a dying church, only two families. So this lady, she's a school teacher. Someone told her about this village, so she came, and believe it or not, she has about 40 kids coming to the Tomorrow Club from the villages around. So the whole church is filled with kids.
Love, Hearing that, would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe? Kids are getting saved, families getting saved, and churches revitalized. $30 a month, 30 disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teaches us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Wisdom of God. The Wisdom of Man says we can earn God's favor through good works, but the Wisdom of God is made known in Jesus Christ, God in human flesh, put to death on the cross to grant us forgiveness we cannot earn. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And push the button, otherwise this won't appear to be interesting. This is terrible! This is horrible! You gotta stay tuned to Wretched Radio!
Easy there, big fella.
Sorry, I've been watching too much of the cable news. Everything is a panic. What you put in, it's what is going to come out. This story from the New York Post, it actually might infuriate you a wee bit, especially if you can't have children. This is going to cause you to be consternated. But perhaps, maybe, just maybe, rather than getting agitated, downright furious, we can understand why it is that these particular people that were interviewed for this particular article have such a horrible perspective on their own children. Headline: Can parents survive months of hell as the coronavirus cancels summer camps?
Bum, bum.
No! I have to spend 2 weeks with my kids this summer. It's going to be eternal conscious torment. The attitude toward children. Ay, 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 ay. And yet, as I read this article in the New York Post, as I have to confess to you.
Did you get all squishy and understanding?
I didn't get squishy, but I got understanding. Okay. It is not my natural propensity. I suspect it isn't yours either. I read a headline like that, and I'm just like, what? You consider summertime with your children to be hell? Is there a stronger word or experience they could have chosen for this? Well, it does reflect the attitude of the parents that were interviewed for this. And yet when they gave details, it didn't cause me to lighten up on the subject or go, you know what? Now I understand. Yes, it is that bad with kids. No, I didn't change my mind about it, didn't change my attitude about it, but at least I got some understanding, and I think you will be a little bit more understanding and perhaps agitated at the same time. I'm reading through this article.
Got the agitated.
Interviewing parents, a bunch of them. See if you can catch this. New York Post, I almost cried. It's a bad blow, said a Forest Hill mom, because her 11-year-old son had camp canceled, a sleepaway camp at the SciTech Academy, which runs $3,450 to $4,750 per session. Well, Fred Sanford, I didn't mean to give you a heart attack over there.
How much do you want to get rid of your kids?
Real bad. Well, they've got tons of money,
yeah.
Clearly. They're living in New York City. That's from New York Post.
Yeah.
And they've got at least a kid, because they only mentioned one kid. She said, quote, "It's going to be bedlam, especially for us parents in the city because of camp closures, summer camp closures. He took it better than me because, quote, I'm going to be stuck with him." You're going to be stuck with your child. Let me tell you something, sister. I would see that as a profound joy. I would go back in time in a heartbeat and go through those years again. I adore my kids today. I adored them then. And to go through those sweet times with my kids again when they're home and they just look at you like you hung the stars and the moon. Would love to do. Hey, let's get in the car. Okay. They just boop off. hey, Dad. It's just as sweet as it can possibly be. Not for this woman. It's going to be hell. Total bedlam. Because I'm stuck with him. Wowza. The alternative, here's the article. A campgrounds, tight bunk quarters, communal mess halls, and adult staff co-mingling are the stuff of social distancing nightmares. But the alternative is chilling. Really? Spending time with your children. Chilling. Not exactly the way that I see it. Quote from another person. A mom. I'm 100% in panic mode.
Really? Because your kids are going to be around.
12-year-old son who was set to attend the $14,000 Explo Overnight Summer Program for the third straight year.
That's like 5 days rent in New York.
So this is the third. So 14,000. What is that? $42,000 for roughly 3 years run. Okay. Doing some math on this. These are wealthy parents. They live in New York City. What's the priority for so many people in that town? Not all, but for so many, it ain't kids. They're almost like an accessory. But there are other things in life that are more important, like me. And me getting some me time. And they talk about that. These couples that are like, we were just going to be able to spend time together and alone and doing things and get a break from them and go out to dinner and see plays and shows. Compared to spending time with your kids. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand. They're healthy. I get that. That's not the thrust of this article. This is like the worst nightmare on the planet for these people. And I know why. It is because kids are not seen as the blessing from God that they are. They are not seen as being this incredible stewardship that we are given to raise them up in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. They are just seen as, well, they kind of serve me. And if I have to do too much work in this, I can't hire it out so that I can pursue my interests. Then summertime without camp is going to be hell. Does it make it better? No. But when you are immersed in that worldview and that type of thinking, why are we shocked when the pagans are acting like pagans? That's what pagans do. And maybe, having righteous indignation, I think it's appropriate along the way, but constantly simmering at these dopey liberals whose worldview is so stupid, maybe we can at least understand where they're coming from. To a degree, if you were immersed in that type of thinking, you'd be inclined to have bad thinking too. And speaking of bad thinking, here's more. Pagans are acting like pagans again. Michael Moore says coronavirus is a warning before Earth gets revenge over climate change. Sorry, a little tickle in my throat right there. Michael Moore apparently thinks that the Earth, the planet, must have some sort of cognitive center to make decisions like this on his podcast. I didn't know he had one. Viruses are a part of nature. This is their planet too. I'm hearing that far too frequently. We're just sharing this planet with microbes. We're just sharing this planet with pets. We're just sharing this planet with a virus. This is their planet too. They are a form of life. And like another species I know well, they're killers. In other words, like human beings. So we're being compared to a virus. This current pandemic is simply Mother Nature giving us a gentle warning. And where exactly is Mother Nature hanging out, Mr. Moore? Where does she reside? What is her scale for weighing these issues, how we treat the planet? Is she at all discriminatory? Does she just go after the big polluters, you know, people who fly around in private jets, have big homes in Michigan? Or does she go after everybody? And who formed Mother Earth? Where did she come from? This is a pagan worldview, the religion of environmentalism that we are seeing more and more. This is not the first celebrity to talk like this, to talk about, hey, this is the planet telling us enough. Really? The planet speaks through giving viruses. Where does this thinking happen? Is it in the center of the Earth? Is it out? It texts. It's far, far away on a planet far, far away, and it texts the information to what receptor on Earth? It's nonsense. but it's a pagan worldview, and we shouldn't be surprised when it gets bonkers. I really want all of you to please take this moment, said Michael Moore, take this virus as Earth's slap on our collective face. Well, I think that's judgmental and intolerant of the mother. Treat it as if nature is trying to tell our species to back off, slow down, and change our ways. So he can interpret viruses. I did not know that this man had the gift of exegeting current events. If you think, said Michael, COVID-19 has been a bummer, then trust me. You literally can't imagine just how awful Earth's revenge against us is going to be for trying to choke it to death. We are in a serious, multi-level, planetary emergency. Who knew? Well, apparently Michael knew. Why? Because he's untethered from God. He's untethered from the Bible. He's untethered from reality. And as annoying as this stuff is, and believe me, it is a great deal of work for me. This man, if he dies in his sins without Christ, is going to go to hell. And it's going to be a whole lot worse than living in New York City for a couple of weeks with your own children. Eternal conscious torment. This man needs saving really, really bad. And only when I remember that will I have any chance at all of doing what my Savior has commanded me to do. Love my neighbor, including bad parents in New York City. And Michael Moore. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.